Welcome to the All Souls Forum here on KKFI. I'm your host, Christina Frazier. Tonight, social worker Linda Johnson and economist Camila Hewitt DeRosset will talk about the millennial generation as they come of age and take the title of America's most populous generation. This show is recorded on April 15th at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church here in Kansas City, Missouri. Our show begins with the speaker's presentation, followed by a short break, and then concludes with the question and answer part of the program. Thanks for tuning in. Now let's join the conversation here at 90.1 FM, KKFI.
Good morning. I'm Rita Norton, a member of the forum committee that organizes these platforms for the discussion of significant issues, especially those that involve ethical values in the contemporary world. Millennials in a multi-generation world. Labels designating age groups are malleable and a bit dangerous because of the generalizations that they generate. Nevertheless, some youngish group of citizens being called millennials is getting a great deal of attention in media today, only partly because of their importance to those who are losing our generational cohorts. Our speakers today are Linda Johnson, who has been director for social work at St. Luke's Hospital, among other things. And Camila Hewitt DeRosset is a marketing professional and economist quite familiar around All Souls, only partly for her work with the All Souls Board of Trustees. And now, please welcome.
Hello. You want me to start? It is on. Very good. So I'm going to sit. That makes it handy for me, and the microphone means you can hear me. Camila asked me 2 or 3 months ago, because she knows I have a daughter living in my home, and she has a son living in her home, and I think her son might be a millennial. My daughter is a Gen Xer. And if we would do this, and I said, huh? What do I know about millennials? And she said, well, do a little research. You'll talk about most anything. And so I didn't do much research, and indeed I will talk about anything. And yesterday afternoon, before we had to leave, I sat down at the computer, and my husband said, what are you working on so hard? And I said, I got to write some notes for tomorrow, and I ended up with more notes than I expected. So when and if you hear me say something that is so outrageous you have to interrupt me, feel free to do so. I'm going to start with what kind of percolated through my head as I've been thinking about millennials. I think it's important first to kind of define some terms. So, Gen Xers are generally now in their 30s and 40s. This isn't real precise, but that's approximately who they are. Baby boomers are mostly in their 50s and 60s, and those of us in our mid-70s are in what's called the oldest or greatest or just the most old-fashioned generation. Millennials in general are younger than 30. And so far, it's defined specifically as those born between 1990 and 2010. I think millennials are going to end up being split. I think those who reached 15 to 18 years of age by 2008, in other words, those who were born in the first 5 years of what's now called the millennial generation, may end up being collapsed into Gen Xers. And what I end up talking about here is Why are the millennials being called the millennials? What has turned them into the group that we see? I also think, as we define our various labels and decades of birth, that it seems important to think about the decades in which our parents were born. My parents were born in the 1910s, and they lived through the Great Depression and part of World War II before my birth. The millennials, in general, have parents who were probably born in the late 60s, 70s, into the early 80s. That was a very different world and a very different time than the one in which I was born. And those of us who were parents in the 60s, 70s, and 80s started for me, had a very different worldview that we raised our children in. And I think you'd have to not only look at who are the millennials and why and how, but who raised them? How did they kind of become what they are? And I think there are four major cultural shifts that have created the world of the millennials. The first cultural shift that happened in the late 90s, early 2000s, and that has been a huge shaping factor to these young people, was the arrival of smartphones. Suddenly, You have tweeting, texting, Facebook, YouTube, Snapchat, Instagram, basically everything you would ever want to know on Google, everyone you might ever want to connect to, everything that's going on in any facet of worldwide life, from fashion to music to gossip to revolution to a local mash mob, all in the palm of your hands. That is a phenomenal shift for those of us who were born in the mid-40s. It's in our hands too, but for many of us, especially those of us in the oldest generation, we're much slower to live our entire waking life focused on this powerful computer in our hand. One of the examples that came to my mind is I remembered writing a term paper. If now you are writing a term paper, even a book, that device in your hand gives you immediate access to all the research you could ever want to do. It organizes the citations and references and manages to get them all properly located in the paper. There's an app that reads your writing and identifies sections or sentences that might border on plagiarism and tells you you may want to go back and either make a citation or work with that. When I typed term papers, I used a typewriter. It wasn't even an electric typewriter when I started. I used a harsh, scratchy eraser to change errors that would often make a hole in the paper. And then along came what was called erasable paper, very expensive. So for students, it wasn't something that I could use all the time. But if I had one I really wanted to work hard on, I'd get this expensive erasable paper. And then we had typewriter ribbons. You guys don't even know this, some of you do, that had a little strip of white on it. And so if you needed to erase a mistake, you'd flip up to the eraser, hit that key, it would erase it on the paper, and then you would type over it. And then you had eraser ribbons that were in a little gadget that the ribbon just pulled out, and you would stick it in there and type over it with that. And finally, there was liquid eraser. Cutting up the first draft of the paper was common because you'd write the paper and you'd kind of have your footnotes in mind, but you didn't know how far down on the page they were going to go, and so you'd cut the paper up to see how much space you needed to save. Can you imagine a youngster in today's world putting up with that craziness? That was all we had. That was the way it was had. So let's start with one thing. There are assumptions about what is a reasonable amount of effort to get the job done is totally different than ours used to be. They would just go crazy. Their expectations about time in general and their attention span are both very different than ours. Another significant reality in their lives that I think has shaped them is that they have only lived post 9/11. I can remember when 9/11 happened, hearing newscasters and politicians saying life would never be the same again, and I didn't believe them. I thought, oh, for heaven's sakes, that's a lot of hyperbole. My life isn't going to change all that much. Well, you remember the concept of private privacy in those days and of what was security all about and what it took to get on an airplane? There are a lot of changes that have happened in all of our lives, but basically we have essentially been in a constant, hugely expensive series of wars or military engagements, costly in money, that used to go to create services and systems in our own country that created the highest quality of life in the world, but also costly in the devastation of those countries where we have been engaged, in the creation of political refugees and terrorists, in destruction of our world reputation and leadership, and many of the things in our own country that used to be the stuff that our taxes paid for because so much money and people are going into this war effort. In the last 40 years, the total lifespan of many Gen Xers and their children, the millennials, we have had a cut taxes, destroy government, political environment, especially at the national level, but it has gradually trickled down to state and local communities as well. That is all they have ever known. They don't remember the 60s with Medicare and Medicaid and poverty. They've never lived in that environment. They know nothing other than post-Reagan cut taxes, downsize government mindset. And I think another reality that is shaping them, but it hasn't even reached its peak, and that's the destruction of our environment because of climate change. That has been a worry that has hung over my head since the late 80s when scientists began to attend conferences that I was at and talk about the impending doom if we didn't begin to change and decrease the amount of carbon dioxide we were pouring into the atmosphere. It reminded me then a bit of my childhood when we practiced crawling under our desks at school in case a nuclear bomb was exploded. We did that. We crawled under our desks at school in case a nuclear bomb hit us. Huh? I even thought then it was a little silly. I've now lived through almost three decades of watching the CO2 level creep up, and as a nation, not only are we doing nothing about it, many people have even been denying that it was ever going to be a problem. We reached the tipping point, the point at which the scientists all warned us at some point we reach a tipping point and it's so high that it's irretrievable. That was about a decade ago. We topped out, and now we are racing down the opposite side of that mountain like an avalanche, gathering speed and momentum even faster than the scientists had predicted. We're only beginning to experience the tip of the problem that will be the reality of change. The generation after the millennials will be those who grow up in the face of a drastically different world and earth, very possibly that won't actually sustain life within their lifetime. And I'm not making this stuff up. It is phenomenal what we have done to the earth, and we aren't even beginning to deal with it. So, what will be some of the changes we will see as the millennials take over our world? They will probably be the instigators and the promoters of 20 to 30 hour work weeks. And with the extra work being done by robots, drones, and artificial intelligences, there won't be a need for 40 hour work weeks anymore because there will be machines that will do a lot of the work for us. They will travel, cook, enjoy leisure time, and continue to invent amazing things. Parenting will be dramatically different, as will family configurations. Earning lots of money won't be nearly as important as living the life that is valued and meaningful to me, myself, and I. And they'll be individualistic, a bit fatalistic, and clearer about the things they want and value. I don't have too much more. Loyalty to jobs and tradition will go away. Relationships will probably be more communitarian, and families will be more multi-generational and boundaryless rather than nuclear family as we've known it. Tolerance of individual choice and difference will continue to expand. Our church recently had a discussion about public policy changes regarding transgender folks. For the millennials, personal choices, sexuality, and race will disappear as issues. Cultural norms fade away when you have China, India, Africa, and the Bronx all on your text messages every day. They'll be more tolerant, non-judgmental. They'll be more aware of the biological imperative to be interdependent and that nature hates a vacuum, but also hates excess consumption and extremes. They'll value sustainability, sufficiency, participation, inclusivity, and solidarity with everything from microbes to mental illness. They bring me great hope. If we can just support and nurture them enough that they don't give up and become cynical in the face of all we have left them to cope with. Yet one more factor that will actually differentiate those born after 1995 is the life experience of living through the Great Recession. Experiencing the crash of the housing market, foreclosures, loss of jobs, expansion of low-paying jobs, growth in the number of people, including their own families, who can no longer function as members of the middle class and who face major financial challenges. Many no longer have any health coverage, no savings, their parents and grandparents may not. They have no clear expectation of security in the future. If they have gone to college, they have huge student loans that hang over their lives, then that they may never be able to pay off. I'm probably too far removed from them to really understand the implications on these younger millennials and or those now younger than 10 whose parents are Gen Xers or the oldest millennials and who will be named something else entirely. My decades of life, just to offer an extreme contrast, started in the early 40s. The first presidential race I followed was Eisenhower versus Stevenson. I grew up on a farm in the middle of Kansas where almost everyone went to church, and the average annual income was $5,000 a year, and we lived well on that. I went to a one-room country school with five boys in my class, plus me. I had farm chores to do every day and knew that someone had to do them for the farm to survive and that my parents couldn't possibly do it all, so there was no question about not doing the chores. I could go on and on, but I think I'll move on to getting us to think about how we bridge these differences in our homes, our workplaces, our churches, and in public policy. And how will we, who are now older, retiring, possibly needing care, and in a large percentage of the population, not having any savings or personal resources to meet our own needs, how will we be living side by side with millennials? You know, I jumped through a lot of different things, talking a little bit more about how have millennials evolved and where have they come from. Not so much where are we going to go.
Hello, I'm Camila and I'm a member of this church. My subject will be millennials. We're going to dig a little deeper. They are by far the largest generation. And so to give you a perspective on how big they are, the baby boomers are 77 million, Gen Xers are 61 million, and the millennials, any idea on how big they are? 92 million, huge. They will drive everything moving forward. One of their biggest things that the millennials have already shown us, which is phenomenal, is, let me give you some data. If we look back at the year 1968, 56% of the age group 18 to 31 was living on their own. 1968, 56%. Now the year is 2012. Only 23% are living on their own. Millennials are very, very comfortable living with their families, with their mother and father, extended family, because they have been wired to become assured multitaskers. Because what their parents have done to them is, every morning, let me take you to dance, gymnastics, Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts. They were constantly traveling with their parents, doing something. So what they can do in a few hours using all the technology would take many others a very long time. One of the things that they are driven to do, it's in their DNA somehow, is to help their parents. They are really very much down to earth. They are right now in our economy the most coveted employees ever. If there's a millennial that's applying for a job, they are going to get the job, because one of the things that Linda already mentioned, they do not see color, they do not see religion, they see human beings. And that is a wonderful thing for all of us. On a political arena, they are very much about climate issues. They know there's global warming. They also know that human beings cause it. So what's going to be very interesting for us, and they very much will be participating in voting. They want their voice to be heard. So what could easily happen is they themselves, if they all show up, can swing many states and many issues. They also, and this is where we're going to see very quickly how they're changing, is how we buy things. Millennials look at two major things when they're buying. Number one is, what do their friends through social media, all social media platforms, say about the item that they're going to buy? Most important, number one. Number two, click and buy. That's it. So as we already have heard in many newscasts, the brick and mortar stores are going to be something that one day we're going to say, God, we had an actual store that we went and bought things. Now understand, the baby boomers, they want to go to a store. They want to touch it, to feel it, try it on. Millennials, what do their friends say? And can I click and buy? And we're already seeing that stores are starting to close down because this generation drives it. And I can't say enough about this generation being attached to their loved ones. It's very important, and if they have children, they're very driven, kind of the old-fashioned way. One of you is going to be working. The other one is going to be raising the child. They're just very much about that. On the subject of health, smoking, drinking globally is out. No interest in smoking and drinking. What they're most interested in is being physically fit, mentally and physically fit. Something else, not only with climate change, but if you know of any millennials, engage them in a conversation that you want to learn something more about, and they will open up like a fabulous book, because they like educating people. As I said before, employers gravitate to them because they want to help everyone. They want to make the world better for everyone. And they also seek out individuals that are very different than they are and different thinking. Back to the political side of the millennials. They expect, because of how they're made, in a sense, their DNA, to be very transparent. So when you tell a millennial it's this way, they first of all respect you totally for helping them get educated. That's real important to them. But if you have a different priority and you're trying to get them over there to your side, it's going to be a real problem, because once they find out that you are not as transparent as they are, all confidence is gone, and now you've lost them, period. And you as an individual, don't even think about going back, because now total trust is gone. They're very transparent, and they're very trustworthy. Okay? One of the things that I want to say in closing in regards to millennials, last week. I was in a hospital having lunch, and I was having lunch outside. They have a beautiful courtyard and trees and all that, so I was having lunch out there. And
on the one day that it was warm, right?
Yes, on the one day it was warm. And right next to me, it's kind of like from here to the piano, that's where the next table is. And I saw a nurse, she was a millennial, and she was sitting down with a lady that was a baby boomer, and I saw their name tags because they were pretty close. And the baby boomer was someone from administration at this hospital. And the conversation started, the baby boomer said, to the millennial, thank you so much for meeting with me, and they were having coffee. I want to ask you something because I need your help. Mind you, if you ask millennials for help, they will open up their hearts, their brains, everything. And she said, I am going to be supervising a team of millennials. Can you give me some pointers? And this millennial said, give them all the tools that they need to do their job. Do not hold back any information. Give them everything they need. And then get out of their way, because they will create things you will not ever think about. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And you have time for questions now. Please remember the rules for questions. Come to the mic to ask your question. One question per person until everyone has had an opportunity to ask a question. And please, no speeches. Try to resist the temptation to wrap your questions into too many statements. Also, please speak clearly and into the microphone.
I feel that if things are going to change in a positive direction relating to the issues that you have just been discussing, millennials and Gen X people are going to have to get out and vote. In your view, are they going to be doing that?
Thank you so much. That's one of the things I totally totally brushed over. But yes, actually, the millennials, it's still early, but what we see right now, they will be getting out and voting. If the subject is climate change, if it's anything on the social side, right now as a group, they tend to lean toward more the Democratic side, but on many other subjects, they tend to lean more toward the Republican side. Will they get out and vote? Yes. That is what all the research that I have seen shows they will get. And if they do, and this is the part I didn't cover, is some major House seats and the major election that's going to be coming up, they can swing it all if they show up.
They will get out and vote once. I think right now there's a lot of energy from Me Too to safety in schools to what's going on internationally. They will get out and vote once and maybe twice. But if they don't see that it's having some impact, I don't know that they will become like my generation, which votes every single election, no matter what. Even if you're gritting your teeth about your choices, you go and vote because it's your duty. It's your, you know, you go to church every Sunday, you vote whenever there's an election. Those are things that I've always done all my life. They aren't going to live by that kind of traditional expectation. If it's not having any effect, if it's not having an impact, they'll find something else to do that they think will change the world.
Camilla, what are the Republican issues that they lean towards?
The Republican issues that tend to lead more is one of finance, because many of them, their education was paid for by their parents, or it was covered. So what they really are looking at is financially what is going to be going on, and that's very, very important to them. And also who's paying for it, because they are, as Linda mentioned, they're very concerned about debts. The majority of millennials, because of how covetous they are as employees, they do not, if they use a credit card, they'll use it for convenience, and then it's paid off. Because many of their baby boomer maybe many of their parents, what I wanted to say, had major financial problems through their life. So they're not going to be repeating. They're very quick learners. So finance is one that millennials know extremely well. And they're not the ones, oh, I want the biggest car with the highest payment. No. There would be very easy, let me drive a used car that I have paid for in cash. No issues on finance.
Or even more, let me use Lyft and Uber and I'm not going to have a car at all.
Exactly. Correct. Yes. I hope that answers your question.
Listening to both of your talks, what I hear is a recipe for disaster for our current political society, because we have one party which only wants people, will only accept people when they are like them, and we have another party which wants everybody to wait in line and seems to be they both seem to be stuck in a past paradigm. How this also the question I have a question that this statistics particularly apply to our society, but how about worldwide?
My information is not, well, I shouldn't say that. Two things that I want to say. One is that I see a transition coming, I think, alongside of or perhaps leading the way for millennials, in that I see lots and lots of women way more engaged, way more willing to be politically active, running for office. My dream and hope is that before I die, half of my political leaders at all level are female. And that will change a lot. And that will pave the way, I think, for millennials to come along. And I think we're on the cusp of that happening. And I think when that happens, to some, I don't think women are the answer to everything. But the fact that we have really been structurally led all our lives, in church, in our institutions, in our government, by old white men, has created a lot of the dilemma that we're in now. And it's in both parties. So I think having more people of color, having more women, is going to start paving the way for the millennials. When I say I don't know what's going to happen overseas, I live in Leavenworth. And one of the ways that I find comfort in living in Leavenworth, I was startled to death when I moved there. I had no idea there was a fort in Leavenworth. And it's a very, very military community. And I was in the Peace Corps during the Vietnam War. So it's not kind of my worldview. But they bring in international officers from around the world, about 120 every year, that stay for 1 to 3 years. Most of them stay for 1 year with their families. And they invite families in Leavenworth to partner with them, to become friends, to help them get oriented to the community, to spend social, have them in our homes, visit their homes. And after the first 3 years of us doing that, we were told by the people that assigned families that we would only get Muslim families because there aren't very many people in Leavenworth that were willing to sponsor Muslim families. And at the end of the year, they ask these families from other countries to give them feedback about how their sponsoring relationship went. And a lot of the feedback they had from Muslim families was that it didn't go very well, that the families weren't willing to never serve pork or to keep their dogs out of the house when they came to visit, or wondered, you know, criticized them for always covering their hair or something along these lines. And we have lived in many countries and didn't do that. And so she said, you're the only people that get really positive responses, so you're only going to get Muslims. Well, that means we've had several people, for instance, from Saudi Arabia who have children in Saudi Arabia and who are talking about these same issues. And we've seen the young new prince of Saudi Arabia. Women are going to start driving. Young people in all of these countries and women in all of these countries are going to, they have their smartphones just as much as we do. They are in communication with us in the same way that our children are in communication with them, or our grandchildren are. And it's not a one-way street. So it's going to percolate. I don't think that, I think national boundaries, I think even nation states may start disappearing in a sense, because we are going to be connected worldwide to each other.
Just to let you know, when you are talking to millennials on any level, they are, through their smartphone, they are searching not only the web, but all the friends that they have, multitude of friends throughout the world, as to whether you are telling the truth or not. If that anywhere along this line says you're not telling the truth, they will call you on it immediately, and then they will start drilling you about your knowledge base. What you never want to do is lose the trust of a millennial, because they can make things much easier for you. They can create shortcuts for you from a working point of view, from a health point. They are poised to drive the health care of their baby boomer parents. So if you're talking to a doctor, and the millennial is talking to the doctor, and the doctor will say, oh, 20% chance of maybe something going wrong, the millennial will start drilling the doctor, what can go wrong? because is it 20% or is it 50%? So thinking you could even turn the truth just a tad bit is not going to work. Plus, because they are so connected, they have friends throughout the world that they're constantly communicating with. So it's not only spell check, it's not only knowledge check, it's the depth of the knowledge that they can go much deeper. And with a baby boomer, the one thing that they want to do is they are sucking up knowledge. If you can give them the correct knowledge, they will create miracles for us in the future. And they want to do that because they were raised to help.
Okay. my question is how uniform are the millennials, you know? I'm the old folks' generation. I started out with a union card and a blue collar, and now I'm a liberal Democrat with a college degree. So I've been watching a lot of the Dirty Jobs, Hillbilly Elegy, Murray, Fishtown and Belmont. And so the question I have with the cell phone and the interconnectedness, how uniform are the millennials? Are you seeing a split between any of the groups, like the people that are studying, you know, say, well, those are the ones that didn't go to college. They're different than the ones that did. And I'm curious whether that's carrying over into the millennials or not.
Sure it is as a transition, but they're all, oh yes, the mic.
They're all on their smartphones. They're all watching the same music. They're all talking the same language. Eventually, some of those differences and barriers, I think, are going to break down. It may be that there's some uprisings that are going to take place between groups between now and then. But my sense is that it's hard to see people as an enemy when you're talking to your peers in their country on your smartphone.
You know, one thing from a political point, millennials are Republicans and they're Democrats. What they really want is commonality where they can join forces. They're really about the whole, not about this side and this side. That's not what they're about. They want to be all inclusive. And that's so no one opinion is better than anyone else's. But if someone disagrees with them, that's when the dance starts. Let's talk about this, because what they're looking for is more information, something that they don't know. Tell them something that they don't know, because they love learning.
Linda, you took a very optimistic view that barriers would break down among the millennials. Yet our experience with Fox News, with groups on the internet, and now with Twitter and Facebook, people tend to be segregating into groups with whom they agree rather than taking a more open view of things. So I would suggest some of the evidence says the barriers may get firmer rather than breaking down. Would you be kind enough to comment?
I don't think so. I think we've almost gotten as bad as we're going to get. You know, in church there's a place online you can go called biasmediachart.com, I think it is. But it's definitely Bias Media. If you go to Bias Media, you'll see it. And someone gave me this chart a while back. And the ultra-conservative publications, newspapers, televisions, everything, are down here on the bottom of the bell curve. And the ultra-liberal ones are down here on the other side of the bell curve. And the ones that are sort of a mix of propaganda and facts are kind of here in the middle. And the ones that avoid a lot of the propaganda, the NPRs of the world or whatever, are up here at the top that are fact-based. And I took it to church, which, of course, are mostly retired military people, and shared that with some of them. And I got feedback that said, there are no facts. these guys who are smart, who tended to be West Point grads, who are officers, that's who's at military. It's not the frontline troops in general. Say there are no longer any real facts. There is no longer truth. That everybody just spins the world from their perspective. But these guys are in their 70s just like me. And I think young people are saying, wait a minute, I can see that the climate is changing. You guys can argue about whether that's true or whether it isn't true. It is snowing, and yesterday it was 80 degrees. We are having extremes. The icebergs are disappearing. The water is rising. Miami is flooding other places. I can see it. It is true. And I think and they're connected around the world. It is much harder to hang on to myths and misinformation when you're connected to Google and around the world to people that says it doesn't look that way here. And I think we're at the... I am an optimistic person by nature. I've been all my life. I was on the front lines of the civil rights movement. You know, back then, though, we were more idealistic. And I am also very practical, and I think that is another thing. The millennials are very practical. They don't necessarily live in a fantasy world. They say, wait a minute, let me check that out. And I think we're about as bad as we're going to get.
That itself is a very optimistic
it
assessment.
Is.
I was trained in the sciences.
Oh.
And what I found is particularly the Republicans, but others, like, you know, the fascists, like their predecessors in Nazi Germany, believe in the big lie. You just keep repeating something over and over and over, even when it's demonstrably false. And it does create a certain following. And I see that going on in our political life. I see it going on with regard to climate change. And unfortunately, some of the people preaching the falsehoods, reiterating them, get elected to political office. Yeah. So I don't know. Is there some hope?
Well, the hope's going to be
if
they show up to vote, climate change, they know exists. They know a lot of issues exist in the economy and also in worldwide. If they show up, they will swing. In fact, I just did a report. They can basically swing most of the elections, no matter where they are in the United States, because they're everywhere. Largest group, they can swing it. And if it's on climate change, doesn't matter what Democrat or Republican, they're all on the same page. If this whole population gets on the same page on the things that are most important to them, and they seem to be, it's going to flip a lot of people in politics. And they're very much into, let's not redo the same thing we've done forever. They're not about that at all, because the history has already proven it hasn't worked, or it has. So change is something that they will do. That's another reason why they're very covenanted with their employer, because many times employers need new energy, new insights, and they will come with that. And they give it freely. They want to help people. No, but let me tell you, it's in the DNA, because many of their baby boomer parents have put a lot of things in them, not knowing how it's going to be played out. And above all, multitasking. What they can do, not only with their cell phone, but nationally and internationally within 5 minutes, it's phenomenal.
You've summarized not just millennials, but several generations that preceded them. And each generation seems to have learned a lesson from their preceding generation. And you've outlined what has shaped the millennial generation, whether it be economic or technological or recession or war. So looking at the millennials now, they are reaching the stage where they're going to be producing the next generation. What is the lesson that they're going to pass on to the next generation, yet unknown?
some of them are things that Camilla's been talking about. The sense that putting a lot of trust in your long-term financial security is not a very safe thing to do. Don't waste a whole lot of effort on things that haven't been working. Pretty pragmatic. I think they're going to look at things like sustainability. I think they're going to look, they'll be much more communitarian. They're going to be me first, but they're going to see themselves embedded in relationships. They won't be the kind of necessarily limited one man, one woman, 2.2 children relationships that we think is the norm or was the norm or something. But I think some of the things that Camila's talking about are going to be what they do. It's beyond me to really guesstimate. I mean, I don't even know what 2018 is going to look like after the election, so it's hard for me to guesstimate. I do think women are coming along as a trend, and that's going to change people's perception of things. I think we're in a big world of hurt in so many of our major institutions. We've seen what happened in Kansas as they crashed and burned, and now are only beginning to say, wait a minute, we totally crashed and burned. How on earth are we going to reconcile and move on from here? I'm not so sure the country isn't kind of getting close to some similar things. But I think there is hope in that. I think there are people, you know, one of the things that the split between the Republicans and the Democrats and the bad-mouthing has resulted in the fact that the largest political party that's growing are the independents, the unaffiliateds. So you've got these extremes, but you've got a middle growing and saying, I don't want, a pox on both your houses. And I suspect that a lot of these young people are going to come into that and say, we're going to problem solve. We don't care what party we're in.
Because they have friends all over the world, they will pull the knowledge base of everyone before they make a decision. Okay? And with that, they are they're very, very hopeful for the future, because their future, they've been raised not only to multitask but to live, to not see color, to not see all the different religions. They see human beings, and that is really one of the most wonderful traits for them to be very negative about someone, be really, really tough for them, because they're looking for the good in everyone. They really are. If you get to know them and work with them, they will help you like you will not believe.
Are there any other questions from out here? Yes.
And here we come with the next generation. Yes.
Yes. Yes. So, yeah, and I was kind of wikiing it, actually, as you were talking. And I feel, so I was born in 1982, so I feel I'm kind of in the middle, right? So, also a parent of an 8-year-old as well as, you know. So this is kind of a new forming idea, you know, as far as how I can step into a millennial's life and as well as my children. And hear you guys saying, so I think that the millennials are idealistic, as I was, as we all were in our youth, right? But I'm wondering, but are being groomed by media for, you know, a larger purpose as far as, you know, where the economy is heading and, you know, all of the kind of the bigger global issues as well. And we see that in, you know, Facebook, where you can only see certain posts or only something comes up, you know, with all of the control over ads and marketing and everything else, right? So they are definitely being led. But my question is, how can I step into that young, group as well? Because I have a couple of times, and I'm just like, okay, I'm old now, you know?
It gets worse.
Oh, yes, exactly. And so also, though, did our parents do that with us? Because I don't know if they actually had that thought, like, how can I step into, how can I connect, you know, and how did you guys do it?
Well, I can guarantee that my parents didn't. I lived on a farm. I had the chickens to take care of every morning and night. I had to cook dinner. You know, there was no question about quote-unquote parenting me. They'd send me to school. They took me to church. But the idea of, and we'd play games, family games together. We would engage with each other. But they had no conscious decisions or plans about how they were, quote, parenting me. I know they didn't. I was much more conscious and deliberate with my own children and read books because I had I had some problems in my own childhood. And we weren't living around my parents when our children were born. Either of our parents were nowhere around. So I deliberately found groups to nurture me and to help support me in my parenting and made conscious decisions about my parenting that were very different than my parents. And I've raised two children that are now in their 40s and aren't married and aren't dating, and I don't think I'll ever have grandchildren. So what I did wrong is beyond me. But anyway, I think people are now much more conscious than they used to be, and it probably gets more so every generation.
Last question. Very last.
You probably covered this, but I'd like to get a little more clarification. We know that, especially in our society, one of the big pushes is, or at least that I've observed, is still, how do I make money? How resistant do you think millennials are to this message as they are currently set up?
I don't think they... Now, my youngest daughter just turned 40, so she's a Gen Xer. She wants to work hard from 8 to 4:30 every day, and she is very smart, and she gets well-paid and well-employed. But if and when that job is no longer challenging her, is no longer letting her learn new things, isn't giving her lots of vacation time, doesn't give her plenty of time to spend after 4:30 with her friends and doing her own thing, she'll quit and go unemployed for, I mean, she's never collected unemployment, but she'll, and she's saving lots of money. She's not a big spender. Money is not a driving force, and I think she's at the very front edge of the millennials on that. I don't think money is going to, I think they saw their parents crash and burn. They saw the houses. They saw the mortgage get foreclosed. They saw their retirement, their, pensions that people had disappear. They saw health care become more and more of a problem. Nursing home care become a huge problem. And I think they're going to say, we do the best we can and we live on limited means. They don't care about buying big houses. They don't really care about buying cars.
Yeah. We have a 34-year-old and a 31-year-old. Bottom line is they live with, the 34-year-old is an attorney and the 31-year-old works for Cerner and he lives in our house. Bottom line is, they are very much about living within their means. But, now I can only speak for my two children, but their friends too, they also have philanthropic ideas. And so if they have a cause, they will find money to help the cause. But they're not just about giving the money. Many of them, they actually go work before. They work for the cause. Is it what it really is? Because they're all about checking things out. And if they don't have the knowledge base, let me help volunteer. Now I will send money. Because they definitely want to help others. And they have the resources to do it.
Now I need to interrupt. Linda and Camila will be can stay for a while for continuing conversation in the library. Turn left as you leave the auditorium. Turn right into the second room after the cloakroom. First, however, let me present them with their honorariums for sharing with us this morning. Our humble U.S. and Union-made form mugs.
Thank you.
Next week's forum features Jamie Jackson with a discussion of Zionism.
Thanks for listening. I hope you've enjoyed tonight's presentation, Coming of Age, Millennials in a Multi-Generation World, with Linda Johnson and Camila Hewitt-DeRosset. This program was recorded on Sunday, April 15th at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church. All Souls Forum is edited and produced for broadcast by Christina Frazier. Our theme song was composed, performed, and recorded by musician Fred Potter. This program will be available for podcast within one day of broadcast on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. Remember, you can also find archived All Souls podcasts and many other interesting and enlightening public affairs programs produced by KKFI on the KKFI website. Thanks for joining us this evening, and we hope you tune in next week, same time, same place, when we will continue the conversation here at 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City's community radio station.